little slower today than you normally are, second service. That's all right, that's all right. Somebody told me that's 20,000 cans. We might have a problem, church. That's all I'm saying, all right? I'm grateful that you're donating those cans, but that's a lot of stuff that we're drinking. I'm just saying. All right, move on. You're like, move on, not funny. Let's keep going. All right. Hey, I'm excited because we're still in this series called Through the Waters, and today is one of those days that really is kind of like a puzzle piece that needs to be placed so that we can make sense of the whole picture. And so I hope that you understand that. There's definitely some more of the theological doctrine stuff that we get to look at today, which is, I think, pretty exciting when things are an aha moment where it's like, oh, and I hope you have some of that. We've been in this series for 6 weeks, and we've looked at the same pattern, repeated again and again and again and again, until last week when the pattern was finally broken. And so Genesis 1 all the way through the Psalms and the Prophets, we've seen the pattern, which is rescue, failure, deliverance, and then drift. And so you've seen this pattern. We've read about it. We've seen it. Every water moment is a new beginning. But the problem is, every one of these water moments, humanity couldn't sustain the new beginning. The waters judged, and the waters delivered, but the waters were never able to quite transform the way we needed them to. And so then last week, Jesus steps into the Jordan River, not because he needed cleansing, but because he was entering the story on our behalf, taking his place in the line, going underneath the water. And yet when Jesus came up out of the water, heaven opened up, the Spirit descended upon Jesus in the form of a dove, and the Father spoke. And from that moment on, water is never the same again. It's never the same. Why? Because Jesus has been in it, and it changes everything. And so Jesus' baptism was not the destination. His baptism was actually the beginning. And Jesus himself tells us, and this is the trick this week, all right? Because Jesus himself tells us that there's another baptism coming, and this baptism is going to cost him everything. And that's where we're at today. But this is what I want you to know. Most of us, I think most of us can define or kind of explain what it feels like to stand at an ending of something. Have you ever stood at the ending of something, maybe a job or a relationship or something, and you're not quite sure what the future holds? Have you ever been in that space? Anybody? Let's see. Okay. Anybody not been in that space before? All right, cool. So we got this situation, right? Where this is ending, and we're not for sure what comes next, and not the clean kind of ending. Like, some of us have clean endings, and it feels good. Not the kind of ending where we already know that there's a new beginning that's waiting for us on the other side. I'm talking about the kind where something is genuinely over. It's like a friendship or a season of life, maybe a version of yourself. Maybe a dream that we've dreamed and we've carried that dream for years, and the space where it used to be is now, it sits empty. It's just empty. It's what I like to call the in-between. Have you ever lived in the in-between before? It's over, but you're not for sure what's next. Not the old life anymore. It's not the new life yet. Just this gap. We read about this gap even in the Bible. It's the Saturday between Good Friday, when Jesus died and was buried, and Sunday when he rose, Easter Sunday. It's the place where grief lives, but hope hasn't quite fully arrived yet, and you don't know how long you're going to be sitting in that space and living in that space. And most people, if you notice, they don't talk about the in-between. We don't often talk about the feelings of the in-between and what happened in the in-between. We'll talk about the death of the thing or when the thing ended. We'll talk about the resurrection, what God did next. But most of us, we don't really talk about the in-between where we actually live. Do you know why? Because the in-between for most of us is quite terrifying. Because it feels like death might actually be the end. It feels like there may not be anything on the other side. We ask questions like, what if there is nothing on the other side of this ending? Or we ask things like, what if the ending is just an ending? And so I think this week for us, Jesus addresses that question, and he answers it directly from inside of it, inside that in-between. And so I want us to look at a few passages this morning, and these passages are going to give us an idea to build on. And in Luke chapter 12, Jesus is in the middle of his ministry. The crowds are following him. He's got all sorts of people with him. The disciples are with him. And he says something that actually stops everyone. And this is what he says in Luke chapter 12, verse 49. Jesus says, "I came to cast fire on the earth." Okay. "And with that it were already kindled," he says. But then he says this, "I have a baptism to be baptized with, and how great is my distress until it is accomplished." And we're going to come back to that. That's the main idea here. And then he says, "Do you think I've come to bring peace on earth? No. I've brought division," Jesus says. "For from now on, in one house there will be five divided. Three against two and two against three. They'll be divided, father against son and son against father, mother against daughter and daughter against mother and mother-in-law against daughter-in-law and daughter-in-law against mother-in-law." Whew. Somebody said, "Why are the women listed so many times in that?" That's what they asked me after first service. They wanted me to answer that question, and I have learned enough to just say, I don't know, take it up with Jesus. I don't normally say that kind of thing. Usually I try to answer it and it gets me in a whole heap of problems. Just saying. So Jesus says he has a baptism to be baptized with. Did you capture that? And he's not talking about the Jordan River, because that's what we talked about last week. That's already happened. He's talking about what is about to come. And for those of us who have studied and read and we know the story of Jesus, then we know what's about to come, and it's the cross and death. It's the descent into the deepest waters of all. And Jesus doesn't use fancy words to describe what he's about to go through. He doesn't say sacrifice. He doesn't say execution. He doesn't even use the word death. He says baptism. He's telling us that his death is a water moment. And it's a water moment for you and me, that the pattern that we've been tracing for 6 weeks, the chaos and then the submission and the dry ground and then the life, is about to happen at a scale that none of the previous water moments have even come close to approaching. This is fresh. But did you notice Jesus says, "I'm distressed by this"? The Greek word is sunecho, which means to be gripped, to be pressed, to be constrained. He's feeling the full weight of this baptism that is about to come, which means he's not detached from the death that he's about to experience on the cross. He's not performing some serenity here for us. He's telling his disciples, "This whole thing is bearing down on me. It's heavy. I feel the full weight of it." In other words, the crisis coming, whether anyone can see it or not, Jesus is feeling it, and he's the only one in the room who understands fully what this is going to cost. And Jesus is not talking about his own death. He's talking about something far greater that is actually still a challenge in the souls and the fight for our souls today. And what it is it's about the collision of God's kingdom with every human system that claims power for itself. The reckoning that all of history has been moving toward this very moment, and Jesus is walking straight into it on our behalf. What I've taken away from this is that the one who goes through death for us is not untouched by it. I don't know about you, but sometimes I think Jesus goes through all of this, and that was his mission, that was what his whole purpose was, therefore he just kind of was able to grind through it. But what he's telling us here is he's stressed out about it. He's feeling the weight of it. He knows this personally. So then in Mark chapter 10, James and John, they come to Jesus, and they come to Jesus with a very specific request. And before we hear what they ask, we need to know what's just happened. Jesus and his disciples are sitting together, and for the third time Jesus is saying, I'm going to leave you. I'm going to depart. I'm going to leave. And this is what's coming. He's walking ahead of them now towards Jerusalem, and the text says that they're amazed, and some of the people who are following Jesus are actually afraid. And the reason they're afraid is they feel Jesus is moving towards something, and that his determination and the weight that he's carrying is going to reveal something about where he's going and what he's going to do. So then James and John pull Jesus aside. They're like, hey, Jesus, come here. Come here. And they've heard everything that Jesus has said. They've heard everything. They still don't understand what kind of kingdom Jesus is building. And so they say, here's the deal. We know something's about to happen. And what they think is going to happen is that Jesus is going to take over the kingdom of Israel, and he's going to kick Rome out, and he's going to become king. And so they say, we want to be at your right and your left. We want the very best seats. And so verse 38, this is what Jesus says to them. You do not know what you are asking. You don't know what you're asking. Are you able to drink the cup that I drink, or to be baptized with the baptism with which I am baptized? He's using the word again. There's the words. This whole idea of baptism, the cup, the baptism, two images for the same exact thing. In the Old Testament, the cup is the cup of God's wrath, which represents the full weight of judgment on a person that sin actually deserves. And Jesus is telling James and John, do you understand what you're asking to share in? Do you understand what you're asking to participate in? Do you know what the kingdom is actually going to cost you? And even though they say yes, they don't understand. So Jesus tells them, he says, you'll drink something of this cup. You will taste this cup. And you will know something of this baptism. In other words, following Jesus means that we pass through death with him, not around it. Not around it. And so we invite people, hey, follow Jesus. Die to yourself and follow Jesus. And we think, yes. How many of us actually like death of anything? Not really. And so right here, this is not a comfortable word that Jesus shares. Jesus is not softening what discipleship actually costs us. He's being precise about it. And what he's declaring and making very clear is that the way to the kingdom runs through the waters of death. The way to the kingdom of God is through what? Death. And how many of us are like, yee, excited about that? And we need to understand it, because this isn't because God is cruel. He's not being cruel. It's because death is where the problem has always been. Death is exactly where the problem is, and it's sin and death, which are the deepest chaos of all of our lives. And I promise you, if you can think about your history, you can think about your family, you can think about your workplace, you think about all the chaos that exists in your life, it all comes back down to sin and death. Does it not? All the dysfunction, all the brokenness, comes back to what? Sin and death. They're the deepest chaos. And when the formless and the void that swallowed up everything since Genesis chapter 3, that's what it is. And if the rescue mission is going to reach all the way to the bottom, then it has to go all the way down. And Jesus goes all the way down. And I think there's one extra thing to take note of here from the exchange with James and John. And they ask, can we sit on your right? Can we sit on your left when you come into your glory? That's really their request. And when Jesus finally sits in glory, I love it. And N.T. Wright points it, he says, there's definitely someone on his left, on his right at the cross, and it's two criminals, one on each side. And what this is demonstrating is that's what the kingdom power actually looks like from the inside. That's what kingdom power looks like. It's not a throne room. It's a cross. And it's not power over other people. It's actually power given away. And this is the kingdom that turns the entire world's idea of what glory actually is upside down on its face. And so we're going to look at 1 Peter chapter 3. In 1 Peter chapter 3, Peter is writing to a community of people who are suffering, and they're suffering greatly. There's huge suffering, and his letter is reminding them, look to Jesus, look to Jesus, don't forget about Jesus. And so in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 18, we get this concept yet again, and this is what it says. It says, for Christ also suffered once for sins, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit, in which he went and proclaimed to the spirits in prison because they formerly did not obey. And when God's patience waited in the days of Noah, while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is eight persons, were brought safely through the water. There's a lot in these verses. It would require about four sermons to make sense of everything in these verses. But this is the piece I want you to capture today. He says, being put to death in the flesh, made alive in the spirit. Did you capture that? This is what Peter's saying. He's saying, put to death in the flesh, and then you're made alive in the spirit. It means down and then up. It's what we've been seeing in this series all along, submerged and then raised. And the pattern has been running through every water moment in Scripture. You have chaos and then submersion and then emergence and then life. There's a down and an up, and there's a submerged and then raised. You see this again and again and again as it flows through Scripture, not in a river, not in an ocean, but found in death and a resurrection. The righteous for the unrighteous. And Jesus goes under and he's carrying what is not his to carry. He's carrying our sin and our failure and our broken cycles and our brokenness and our addiction and our inability to sustain what's on the other side of the water, which is life. And when Jesus comes up, we come up with him. And this, I think, is the deepest water moment that you're going to read in the entire Bible. This is what every previous water crossing was pointing toward. You can read Noah and the flood, Israel and the Red Sea, Israel and the Jordan River, and then Jesus at the Jordan River. All of that was a rehearsal for this moment, because the cross is the real thing. And so we've been trying to look at a model every week, and Jesus is our model this week, and not because he's a good example to follow, although he is. But why is he our model this week? Because he's the one who goes where we cannot go on our own. We can't. And so I want to sit with this carefully. And here's why. I think there's a temptation often for us to look at the cross, and we take some lessons from the cross, and the lessons are courage and sacrifice and endurance. And we look at these things, and while all of those things are there and all of those things are very important, they are not the point. They're not the point. The point is that Jesus goes through death so that death is no longer the final word. This is huge for us. It's huge. It's the puzzle piece. I mean, you think about what every previous water moment in the series had in common. Every single one of them. Every one of them. Someone went under. They went into the chaos, into the deep, into the unknown, and they came out on the other side onto dry ground. Every time, without exception, you can read Genesis 1, Noah and the flood, the Red Sea, the Jordan River. The pattern has never failed, but what changes at the cross is actually the scale. Because this is not chaotic water. This is actually death itself. It's the deepest, most final thing in the human experience. When death became the curse in Genesis 3, when you died, you were dead. Everybody understand that? Yes? Am I losing you? Like, dead is dead. Like, I don't know how else to explain it. Like, dead is dead. And it was the most final thing for the human experience, and it was the thing that ended the story. It was the thing that had the last word in Genesis 3. And then Jesus goes into death willingly, knowingly. He's told his disciples it was coming. He said, I feel the full weight of it pressing down on me. And he went anyway, not because death didn't matter, but because he knew the pattern that death always created. The submersion, the emergence, then dry ground, then death, and then life again. He knew the pattern. And he knew what was on the other side, and he knew not because it was easy, he knew because he trusted the God who was always the one who always, always, always brought life from the deep. And on the third day, Resurrection Day, Easter Sunday, the pattern held. And Jesus did not skip Saturday. We'll come back to that in just a moment. But Jesus, he wasn't revived, he was resurrected, and a new kind of life emerges on the other side of death, the first of a new creation, dry ground appearing from the deepest waters that have ever, ever existed. But what about the in-between? Death on Friday, buried on Friday. I often wonder why Jesus didn't skip Saturday. Don't you? I mean, how many of us like Saturday? You know, we the death of something on Friday, some of you are like, yes, I like Saturday. And I'm going to ruin that for you right now, just so you know. But the death of that thing on Friday, how many of us wish Jesus would have just resurrected on Saturday? Like, why two nights in the tomb? You could have just hung out one night. But you decide to stick around in the tomb a little bit longer. And I think the reason Jesus did not skip Saturday is because he was in it, the body in the tomb. The disciples scattered and the disciples hid. The women came to anoint him, and they know that this would be final. They had no idea what they were going to find. The silence where the voice of God had been, and Jesus was in this in-between too, not outside of it, not above it, present in the Saturday, present in the not yet, in the place where death looks final, but new life hasn't begun yet. And I know some of you are in the in-between right now. And what I just described, you're like, that is my life. There has been a death to something, and that new thing hasn't emerged yet. And I'm just hanging out in this tomb, wondering when new life might come to be. And if you're in the gap between the ending of something and whatever comes next, if you are in the Saturday with no clear view of Sunday coming, Jesus has been there. I want you to hear that. He did not pass through it quickly. He stayed in it and still came out on the other side. And what I want you to know is you are not alone in your in-between. You're not alone. Like we have every week in this series, I want to name something very directly. Because some of us are carrying something that needs to die. And this is when at church we get real excited, because we love to talk about the things in our life that need to die. We love to confess. We love to like come clean. We love to lay it down. Did you know that's not true at all? We don't. We don't like to talk about it. But some of us have something that needs to die. I don't know about you, but when I sit with the Lord, not very often, but I'm like, Lord, is there anything that needs to die in me? He usually gives me a few things that come to mind pretty quick. And my hunch is, some of you are like me, I said something in us needs to die, and you already know what that is, and you're like, where's the fastest exit door? Because I want out of this. Because it's not something we enjoy actually talking about. And then you're maybe sitting here and you're like, I don't really have anything that needs to die. Well, I'm going to help you with that, all right? I try to be kind to everyone. Some of us are carrying a version of ourselves that we've been holding on to way past its time. And it's time for that to die. And some of us have a pattern of living that keeps us from the life that's trying to emerge. And we keep going back to those same old patterns, to those same old habits, to the same old addictions, to the same old spending habits that make us feel good about ourselves inside but are actually destroying us, right? Like something in us needs to die, and we're living in a pattern, we're stuck in a pattern, and it's keeping us from actually enjoying the life that's trying to come from it. Some of us have a grip on something that God has been asking us to release for a really long time, probably far longer than we want to admit. And every time we pause and we say, what needs to die, that thing comes into mind, because it always comes into mind, because it's the very thing that God's been asking you to surrender for a long time. And I think it's in that right there that the gospel speaks. Jesus calls his death a baptism. Jesus uses the same word and the same image, the submersion and the emergence, the down and the up, the pattern that is held ever since Genesis chapter 1. What needs to die in us is not the end of the story. And yet that's the very thing the enemy is trying to say. Don't let that die. Don't let that die. If you let that die, you don't know who you are. If you let that die, if you let that go, you don't know what you're going to do the next time you're stressed out. You let that go. You let that die. You don't know what good life ahead, new life looks like. And the enemy shouts. And so we hold on to it tightly while God's saying, why don't you let that go? Why don't you let that die? Why don't you let it go so that you can see what life looks like on the other side? It's not the end of the story. It's actually the passage. Death is the passage to the next part of the story. I don't know if you know this or not, but you can't have a resurrection without death. It just doesn't work. You can't resurrect something living. It's got to die. I know, this is brilliant, isn't it? Like, so profound. It's not cruel. It's actually the entire shape of what God's been trying to do in the Bible. The cross has to happen before the empty tomb. The cross has to happen before new life. The cross has to happen before death is conquered once and for all. Saturday has to come before Sunday. The submission comes before the emergence. And so the invitation is not to make peace with death. It's to trust God who always, always, always brings new life from the deep. That's what it's about, to trust God whose pattern has never failed, to trust the God who went all the way down into the deepest deep, into the deepest water there is, and he came up on the other side. And so I'm going to ask you again, what needs to die? Between you and God right now, what needs to die? Performance? Is your life feel satisfied because of what you accomplish and what you achieve? Is it bitterness? Some of you have been carrying around bitterness, and the bitterness that you're carrying and holding against other people, they have no idea. And it's killing you and it's wrecking your life. Control? How about an old story about yourself, good or bad? And God's inviting you to let that story die so that he can do something new and something fresh in your life. Pride? What is the grip you're holding that is keeping you from going under the waters, releasing it fully, because you're afraid that maybe there's nothing on the other side? What is it? See, the promise of the gospel is not that it won't hurt, by the way, because it's going to hurt. It's going to be very painful. Every time God's asked me to let something die in me, it stinks. And it's painful. And sometimes I'm really reluctant and it ends up being a battle that he's like, if you just let go, we wouldn't have this problem. It's painful. It hurts. But what I know is it's worth it because the pattern holds when there's submersion and emergence and death and resurrection. The God who brought Jesus up from the dead is the exact same God who shows up in my in-between of letting that thing go and new life emerging. He's been in it. He knows the way out. And he won't leave us there. Peter says something really fascinating in 1 Peter worth paying attention to before we move on into our response time. Many of you know that August 30th, we've got a baptism Sunday, and this is just really important to take note of because baptism is not primarily about washing clean, according to 1 Peter. It's about publicly placing ourselves alongside Jesus in his death and his resurrection, and it's a declaration that, hey, I'm with you on that side of the water. And so this is what Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. He says, baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you, not as a removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ, who has gone into heaven and is at the right hand of God. Like it's a beautiful declaration of saying, I know I can die to myself again and again and again and again and again and again, because he's probably going to ask me to do that again and again and again and again. Knowing there is life because I've aligned myself and unified myself with the one who went through it once and for all. Does that make sense? And so at Mountain View, we've had 38 baptisms this year already. It's incredible. There are two more. We had 36 last week, two more. They're here somewhere at the river this week. There you are. Yeah, there you are. I got great pictures of you, right? It was good. You can clap for them. They're clapping for you. Maybe you should wave now, like you guys are hiding even further. Sorry. But if you've ever thought about making this declaration, I just invite you to begin praying about it. I invite you to talk to somebody. You can fill out our QR code and somebody will contact you this week, or you can go see Pastor Craig at the Next Step table and say, hey, I'm ready to take this step. Whatever it is, pray about it and see if God's inviting you to participate in that. All right? We're going to move into our time of communion. And this is what I want to leave you with as we think about communion. The bread and the cup represent the body and the blood. And it represents the body and the blood of the one who went all the way down into the deepest of the deep. And every time we drink the cup and every time we eat the bread, we are declaring that his death was not the end, that it wasn't the finished point, that the pattern held, that he came up. And what we're doing when we eat the bread and drink the cup is we are declaring that we are united with him in death, in the in-between, and in the resurrection. And so I'm telling you, as you eat the bread and you drink the cup, you can take it to the bank that he's with you. No matter where you're at in the journey, he's been there. And if you're in the in-between right now, you're not alone. He knows what that's like. And so I would eat the bread and drink the cup today and remember, he conquered death. We have no fear over the things that he might ask us to let die because he's conquered it. So there's a table down here, one back here, one over here, one up here. We just like to give you some space and some time to pray, to think. You can do it together with your family or with a group of people, but share together in the bread and cup. You're free to go.